Welcome to another episode of Disrupt, the Home Healthcare News Podcast. I'm your host, Bob Holly, and today we'll be digging into my conversation with Senior Helpers CEO Peter Ross, right after this word from our sponsor. HomeCare Homebase gives you the tools you need for detailed benchmarking and regular review of key performance indicators that can make or break your business. We make it easy to track your progress towards specific goals, and we help you stay on track to meet them. From changing CMS rules to complex value-based care, HCHB keeps you focused and prepared for whatever comes your way. Learn more about how we can help you meet your goals for 2022 and stay on track for long-term success. Visit hchb.com today. Senior Helpers is one of the largest home care organizations in the U.S. It was acquired by Advocate Aurora Enterprises nearly a year ago, so we thought it was as good of time as any to catch up with CEO and Chief Marketing Officer Peter Ross. During our conversation, Peter and I certainly talked about home care M&A trends, but we also touched on cost of care increases, the workforce shortage, and much, much more. So let's get to it. All right. I am now pleased to welcome Peter Ross to the podcast. Peter Ross is the CEO of Senior Helpers. Can't believe we haven't had you on the podcast before. Peter, how's everything going?
It's going awesome, Bob. And thank you so much for including me. Happy to be here.
Well, it's been a while since we've last caught up, actually. How has everything been going for you and for Senior Helpers so far this year?
It's been a great year. We had a phenomenal 2021, and this year we're off to another great start. We have noticed, some more with the pandemic and the challenge with Omicron, that we've had some more staffing challenges than we're used to. But it seems to be kind of leveling off at this point. And when I talk about staffing challenges, Bob, I really talk about, caregivers who get sick. So it's harder, obviously, that we don't want them out with a family when they're on, until they're quarantined. So we've noticed that a little bit this year, but other than that, demand is at the highest it's ever been, and we're feeling really good about 2022.
Yeah, and I know that staffing generally has been the main focus really for everybody last year and this year. Is that currently your biggest focus as Senior Helper CEO? What's kind of on your radar right now?
Yeah, with staffing, certainly one of the biggest things we talk about every day and one of the things I look at every day. I'm also the chief marketing officer. So we've last year generated 170,000 caregiver applicants through our marketing fund purchases for applicants across the system. We've been really focused on obviously getting applicants, Bob, but the other thing we really have been focusing on is retention. Retention and utilization. We find that turnover among caregivers is probably as big a challenge as it is in getting caregivers. So it's after, and we do an extensive training program for all of our caregivers. So getting someone hired, getting them trained, and then getting them out in the field, and for them to lose them really is really even a bigger issue than sometimes not getting them at all. So I think we've been trying to balance our focus as much on the retention side of caregiver management as much as it's been on the front end of recruiting.
Has Senior Helpers calculated the cost of losing the caregiver? I know that there have been some studies that it's like thousands of dollars every time a caregiver leaves to train that replacement.
Yeah, I mean, we know that the cost to acquire caregivers can run anywhere from, we had a pretty effective program last year, but I think industry averages show about $500 to $600 of just recruiting somebody. Then you're putting in 20, 30, 40 hours of training, and you're paying them for the training. And then you're getting them finally up to speed. So I would agree, Bob. I think it is in the thousands, probably $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 of turnover, which is why we're really focusing with our system and our franchisees and our corporate locations of really around what can we do to better retain them. We've been fortunate to be a great place to work the last 3 years from Fortune magazine, the only national home care company to have that. So we really try to do what we can to, to cut down the turnover as much as we can. But I think it's more than that. The year of the employee or the year of the challenge in workforce, just from a supply perspective, and also what I think all industries are saying, we've got to find better ways to make their life awesome and while they're working with us, so they don't want to leave.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll touch on staffing again over the next 30 minutes or so, but since it has been a while with us chatting, What's the overall senior helper's footprint look like today as we're speaking here, you know, in the middle of February 2022?
We've grown quite a bit. We're over 360 locations in 44 states, Australia, and Canada. We continue to add between 25 and 35 new locations and new franchisees each year, and continue to show some tremendous results with each of our franchise offices. So how they're growing. It's been amazing through the pandemic. And I know we haven't talked a lot during it, the time that, you know, we've seen tremendous growth during that time. When I think when it first happened back in March and April of 2020, I think the world wasn't sure what was going to happen. I feel very blessed that we are in the industry we are in, but we also have the great, you know, franchise ownership and commitment, you know, throughout our system, and the really hard work of our people, our caregivers really stepping up. You know, we have 20,000 employees out there. So it really bodes well for the courage and you know, really the drive they have to really helping others. As we know, the pandemic and COVID really hit seniors really hard. To get that kind of level of support and compassion, I thought was just amazing.
I think one of the last times that you and I connected was to discuss the Advocate Aurora Enterprises acquisition of Senior Helpers. Before that, I think we did a 2020 Outlook webinar together where we talked about home care trends for 2020 and we offered some predictions on 2020. I guess it's probably safe to say we were pretty far off base.
Well, I think we certainly exceeded all of our expectations, certainly for 2020. And I think that was really the great unknown, as you and I talked about at the time. I think if anyone had a crystal ball, then I give them tremendous credit. We just didn't know. It was the great unknown. And I think that certainly has bode well for our future foundation of growth. And certainly working with Advocate Aurora has been amazing as well.
Circling back to this, the staffing topic, we have talked a lot since I joined Home Healthcare News in 2018. So I know that you've always been a big proponent of upskilling workers, creating career opportunities for caregivers. That's a huge topic of conversation right now. Have you seen those investments that you made at Senior Helpers really pay off and maybe give you a head start on some of the retention efforts people are focused on now?
Yeah, we do actually. We invested into a program we call the Center of Excellence. It's basically a setup within each of our offices that allows us to train caregivers who have never been caregivers before. Bob, when I started Senior Helpers back in 2002 and, you know, starting to grow the franchise in the mid-2000s, you know, there was never an issue of finding people that had experience. There was plenty of workers to work as caregivers, but now that's not the case. You have to go out and create basically great caregivers. And the Center of Excellence really allows us to simulate what it's like to be in the home. It's like a real apartment. You know, what a senior living space would look like with a bathroom and a living room and a dining room and a kitchen. So you have this kind of a bedroom as well. So you can work with them on Hoyer lifts and transfers and pivot poles and stairs. And so we can train them. And I think that's really helped us out a great deal to provide the right atmosphere. One of the challenges in caregivers, caregivers get very frustrated when they don't know how to do something. You know, every caregiver that's a caregiver wants to make a difference, and ours certainly want to do that as well, but they want to have the tools to be able to do it. They want to be able to have the training to be able to do it. And we've invested heavily in that. And I think that's why, you know, when we get our Great Place to Work scores, that they're so off the chart. Even our Net Promoter scores, we do every single day and month and throughout the year of our caregivers, you know, shows Net Promoter scores, Bob, in the high 60s, which is just out of, if you know anything about Net Promoter, which I know you do, you know, that's like up there with the highest in any kind of industry you're going to look at. And so we really feel good about the Center of Excellence, what we're doing with our training programs, our commitment to the caregivers. We've got to find a way to make home care and personal care at companies in this industry that really the employer of choice and a destination. So you've got to find ways of making their benefit programs better. You've got to find ways of respecting them and what they're doing. You got to pay fairly, provide incentives. You got to create ladders for them so that when they come in as a caregiver, we do training on dementia. We do training on Parkinson's. We do training on all chronic care management. So we can start to get them different levels of ladders that they can grow their career with. We have many caregivers that end up coming into our office and working when in the office to do work with scheduling and customer service and client service. So there's ways we're trying to do what we can. We got to do more. I mean, we as a company and we as an industry really have to do more in that area. But that's certainly some of the things that we've done.
You mentioned how in the past you would really recruit from that pool of experienced caregivers. Maybe today you don't have that luxury. Are there other labor pools that you're tapping into now that maybe you haven't in the past, whether it might be, you know, the hospitality sector or fast food workers, trying to get them to go into home care?
Well, I think we're certainly going after a different age demographic. If you looked at caregiving in the past, Bob, most caregivers are 45 to 65, 90% are female. I think you just can't hit the workforce demands with just focusing on that kind of age demographics and pool. We've gone after millennials. We've gone after high schools and community colleges. We've gone after hospitality. We've gone after fast food. You know, we've gone after folks and said, look, have a career that's really, truly making a difference. And I'm not shooting down hospitality or restaurants here. I do happen to like those too. But I think with senior care, I think people feel like it's almost a mission-driven kind of business. I always tell people Senior Helpers is a mission-driven for-profit, you know, business. And we are really trying to make a difference out there in people's lives and letting people like age in place. So we try to really build that along with the caregiver recruiting to really have them understand that this is a really I look at it from a making a difference and feel good kind of a career for you. And we as an industry and as a company have to find a way to make that a long-term career.
You mentioned the Center of Excellence. You know, on a corporate level, what else are you doing to help your franchisees keep their caregivers this year?
Well, trying to go out and negotiate benefit programs, resources. We looked at and tested, you know, providing Amazon Prime for caregivers, Netflix for caregivers, you know, coming out with different kind of benefits because we tried health insurance, and health insurance, A, can be very pricey. Many caregivers have access to health insurance through state Medicaid. We were trying to find out other ways to kind of get their attention more than just money. So I think we continue to look at it we call ourselves the Franchise Support Center, is to continue to look at types of tools and resources and programs and training programs and benefit programs that we can help to put out there to help that. We also look at how we can train. You know, part of one of the biggest challenges of any kind of retention strategy is how do you manage your people? So we have programs that we've rolled out for our franchisees and their management teams in these offices on how to really work with caregivers, how to manage caregivers, how to motivate caregivers, how to make them want to feel like part of a family, how can we keep them longer? And we do training on that level. And of course, I mentioned before, we do a lot of work with driving caregiver applicants to our offices as well for getting them new and coming into the business. So we're trying to do everything we can. It comes down to the local office or our corporate office or our franchisee's office. We have a lot of corporate centers as well that we do their own home care, they're not franchised. And we really try to focus on that level of local community. What are you doing in your community with your teams to make them want to be part of your family for a long time?
Just a quick reminder for everybody tuning in. I'm speaking with Peter Ross, the CEO of Senior Helpers. Peter's also the Chief Marketing Officer of Senior Helpers, and that's actually something I didn't know before, Peter, so thanks for pointing that out. We could probably go on and on about the caregiver shortage, but I'm curious, what issue isn't getting enough attention right now among home care operators? What's out there that not enough people are talking about?
Well, I think what's out there, we've done a lot of work and trying to look at data behind our services. And Bob, what I mean by that is for many years, our industry in the personal care space and the home care space has been personal care, providing caregiving. We're not Medicare reimbursed. We're not star rated. We don't have all these outcomes of claim information that you get when you're dealing with CMS all the time. And that's one of the things that I started looking at years ago. And we came up with our life profile assessment tool, ability to really create an autonomy score for whether seniors can live out their life in their own home safely. And what's the chances of them being readmitted to the hospital? We need to keep seniors out of the hospital, out of the ER. Good things don't happen when those things happen there. We want to keep them in the home. And I think what we're finding is you know, getting the data to go to the payers, to go to the Medicare Advantage companies, which are now beginning to reimburse for personal care services, with data to show them CMS. I met with a CMS director as part of a healthcare leadership council call a couple months ago, and, you know, asking questions, but also showing proof of, hey, this is what we do. This is how we can help prevent falls. We make sure they have their medications. We keep them out of the ER or the hospital. This is what we can save downstream in the healthcare cost. And I think data, Bob, is going to be some of those things that this industry, which has never had to do much with, is now doing a lot more, having to do a lot more. And in fact, that's what Senior Helpers focuses a great deal, is what is outcomes? What are healthy outcomes for, you know, what's the definition of, you know, Advocate Aurora uses a metric called, you know, basically healthy days. You know, how many healthy days do folks have? What are we doing to make sure that there's a change of condition? We alert the provider. What's our integration with the rest of the health system? That's one of the benefits with Advocate Aurora, because we do own the health continuum. How do we communicate to those systems to let the providers know, look, Mr. Jones or Mrs. Jones is having a challenge with this today. We want to let them know that before it does result in an ER visit or a hospitalization. So I think we have to work with, how do we prove our worth as an industry? Well, again, a lot of us get private pay money, so people will argue, well, why do you need data? I like to have data for families too, not just the government. But I think you have four or five payers that own all the Medicare Advantage markets. And, you know, and pretty much, you know, the government, when it comes to, you know, insurance and also on the private side, we've got to be able to go to them and say, this is why you should pay us a fair rate. You know, one of the comments I made to the CMS director is I said, you want to have access to care, access to services across the country through state Medicaid programs. And we want to as well. But when the Medicaid reimbursement is sometimes less than when you pay caregivers, you know, on an employment model, you know, how do you expect us to get access to those folks? And I appreciate her comments about getting access to more people that desperately need it, certainly people of color. We're all over that. We would love to support them, but there's got to be a better way that when you have states increasing wages, you know, to $15 an hour, but your Medicaid reimbursement never goes up when the wages go up. So there's a lot of things there, but I think the way we get there, Bob, is not by just yelling from the highest hill. It's really going down to, hey, this is the data we have that why you should reimburse us. We're going to save you money. We're not going to cost you money. And you really can't afford not to use us. Here's why.
Two follow-up questions that I have for that last response. The first one is, you know, when you talk about leveraging data in your conversations with, you know, prospective payer partners or even referral partners, are they most interested in the outcomes data, healthy days at home and, you know, readmission rates? Or do they also care about things like number of missed visits or call off times, things like that, like the scheduling metrics, I guess I'm curious about?
I think the first part, I mean, we care a lot about the second one. We probably don't tell them a lot about the second one. We try to fill those shifts when there is a call out. But, you know, certainly on the first side of it, they do care. They want to know, especially on hospitalizations. If you're dealing with a health system, the most expensive cost of Medicare is a hospital visit. So you have to find a way to keep the hospitalizations down as much as you can. I think they want to hear about that. What we also like to talk about is the satisfaction with the client. You know, how happy are they? What's the quality of care? It's interesting. I've always had a challenge when I looked at healthcare in general when I first got into the business, was that people talked about reimbursement and compliance. Where's the patient? why don't we take care of the patient? I know that's what the doctor's taking over for. What are we doing to take care of the patient? So we really talk about those healthy days. We really talk about why our outcomes are so much better. Why our ER visits are down? Why is hospitalization readmissions under 3%? Those are real data points for them to say, hey, you're really making a difference. But more importantly, Bob, you're tracking it. We're really trying to come to the table with data. I've always felt as a Six Sigma graduate that, you know, data sets you free. It's not subjective. Here's our data. And now working with Advocate Aurora, we have access to great claim information because they obviously have been on the claim side for years, and they've been value-based and doing value-based and risk-based care for years, one of the first hospital and healthcare systems to ever do it. So we have a lot of great history and a lot of great tools and data that we can use there too. So those folks want to know what's going to make their life better. And from the payer side about it, it's usually about money.
Speaking of money, the second question I had was, I think 21 or 22 states increased minimum wage in 2022. But then even beyond that, just to help with recruiting and retention, I know a lot of home care operators independently increased caregiver wages. Then there's also just higher operating expenses, you know, PPE that you still have to purchase. All of that has factored into cost of care increases. And I think Genworth Financial just came out with their annual cost of care survey. And it was something like home health aid services went up by maybe 12% and homemaker services went up by 10%. What does cost of care look like for the senior helper system right now? And has there been any client pushback to that? Or do clients kind of understand that, hey, it's getting tougher to do this?
Yeah, first of all, it's running similar to what we're seeing. And it really comes down to the payer source, right? So if you have a lot of private pay, which we do and our industry does in general, you have a situation where you're working with families to explain what's going on. They see all the news. They see that minimum wage went up. As an industry, I've been involved with the Home Care Association of America since 2008. You know, we've always paid more than minimum wage. It was never an issue of paying because you had to. That was because the supply required it. And you always paid more than that. So I think, certainly the states, the 21 you're talking about, are going up in minimum wage. Those are easy ones to say, look, you know, we have to increase. We increase our rates every year, but we probably have increased them in the last couple of years a little higher because of what you're saying. Are we getting pushback? I mean, some families understand it very much and are going along with it. You might have to readjust some of the hours per week you're doing so that you don't maybe not give as many hours from affordability. I don't think we as an industry, Bob, know what the ceiling is to rates. And you have rate fluctuation throughout the country, anywhere from Northern California to the Bay Area. You might be charging $35, $40 an hour, where in Boise, Idaho, it might be $22. So there's all of those types of things from a geographic perspective. But I think those are fair things to see because the cost of care is getting higher. The challenge really is around the government payers and Medicare Advantage. If you're looking at Medicaid or VA or Medicare Advantage, that's where you have to educate them because a lot of them come in with rate first and ask questions later. So we've had to kind of educate them and say, well, you're offering a rate that's less than what, you know, that's less than what we pay people. How do you expect us to do that? Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the ways why I asked the CMS director the question. I said, we want to provide the care. We're not looking, you know, people have this thing that, you know, home care agencies are making all this exorbitant profit. It's a fair business, but the margins are not as high as people have always presented them to. I think they're fair, but they're not ridiculous. We're not drug companies here. So I think that piece of it, I think it's a bad rap from that respect. We're trying to provide a fair service at a very fair price and affordable price as many people as we can, because we want to employees. Yeah, we want to be profitable, but you know, the profit margins are kind of baked into how this industry works, and it's a fair market.
And so this question is related to some of these supply and demand economics. Because the supply of caregivers is limited, I know a lot of home care agencies have had to really focus on right fit clients, and maybe a case they could have staffed in the past, they can no longer staff, or they're choosing to not staff those, you know, 1 or 2 hour cases to instead focus on really high needs clients. And that is translating to maybe higher client turnover. Are you seeing higher client turnover throughout the senior helper system? And, you know, are you kind of focused on that right fit situation as well?
Well, not as much client turnover as right fit kind of moving forward. So as we bring new clients on, as we look at our existing clients, you know, it's interesting. You can do this with any home care agency, not just senior helpers. You can look at clients they might have had 3 or 4 years ago and they never raised the rate or never changed the rate much from that time, but they're not taking on a new client that the rates from the market perspective are significantly higher because they don't have a caregiver to staff it. Well, that's got to be looked upon and say, okay, either you make the rate for the person you've had for a while be more fair, or you don't staff that case and move on to that more right fit client. I do think that home care, you know, and that's why I think it's a challenge for the government payers. if you have a home care agency that has a demand, which, you know, we do at Senior Hoppers throughout our whole system, a high demand for services, but our workforce more challenged, why would you put a caregiver that's getting to a Medicaid client that's getting reimbursed at $22 an hour when your private pay client's paying $26? You know, you have an opportunity to pay the caregiver more. And obviously, the better you pay the caregiver, the better that option is, the more hours you can give them, Bob, the longer time they'll stay with you. So you have really, it's a catch-22. If you don't start looking at the right fit, it puts a lot of challenges on the agency and us at Senior Helpers on how do we service all these clients, whether it's an hour minimum per day, you know, whether it's or per shift or those types of things. I think you have to make some hard decisions if you're dealing with a workforce that's, you know, such a supply challenged workforce. You want to maximize the staff you have to the best opportunities to provide the right fit care.
And we have about 5 minutes or so left before we're going to wrap up this podcast conversation. So I want to shift gears a little bit because we're a month or two away from the 1 year anniversary of Advocate Aurora Enterprises' acquisition of Senior Helpers. That was in early April of last year, correct?
Yeah, April 1st.
How has that gone? Walk me through kind of the first 10 months or so.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's been eye-opening for me to have a chance to work with such a great organization and great people. I mean, the team at Advocate Aurora Enterprises, Advocate Aurora Health, have been just a joy to work with. And I think it's interesting because as you begin to put synergies in place, what we found was that, both organizations are running at their pace and there was really nobody assigned to really, okay, we have a resource on your team, our team, to manage the synergies. So we definitely had to go out and hire some of those and build some of our team around that for those synergies. And again, in our case with Advocate Aurora, there's really two types of synergies we look at. One is that they're very, very large in the Illinois, Wisconsin area. And we have franchisees in both corporate locations and both those states now. So really, we try to focus on, okay, how do we find ways for them to work together in that healthcare continuum? So we work really closely with the home health and hospice team and the community-based care and population health teams at Advocate Aurora to begin to drive those synergies in those markets. Then outside those two states, Bob, we've been really looking at, okay, what other types of resources and tools can we give to the other offices across the country that we can, build on? That's really where we came up with the data that we're looking at and the data that we're trying to stand up in some of these pilots we're doing with Advocate to really begin to use those to leverage those against with other health systems across the country and why you should work with Senior Helpers. Why should you work with personal care? So I think we made some really good progress there. I think both sides would like to go faster. I think that's natural in any type of situation with any type of merger of services and organizations. But I can tell you that the future is really bright. We've seen some really good results so far, but I think we're just scratching the surface.
I remember last year talking in April, there really hadn't been any major deals announced. This deal, came out, and then it seems like one after another, there was major transaction related to home care franchise companies. Do you think we're going to see more M&A activity around the home care franchisers this year?
I think it's all timing, right? So most of, we were one of the few that actually the only one in my history of actually selling Senior Helpers three times that we had a strategic that was in the mix and actually did buy, which obviously is Advocate Aurora Enterprises. And so I think, when you look at, other franchise organizations, most of them are private equity owned. The Honor would be an exception, but I would argue the Honor is private equity owned somewhat as well. I think when you look at that, then Bob, there's always a horizon, 3, 4, 5 years is when they're looking to launch another sales process for them. So you can almost pretty much look at the home care agencies, home care franchise and look back at when they were bought. And you can pretty much add 3, 4, 5 years to those dates. And I think you'll see more activity. It's a hot market. I mean, we had 55 management meetings through three different processes. There's definite interest in the space, mostly around private equity, but I do think the Advocate deal, the Honor, there's more kind of strategic plays here. I think more and more people are seeing in the healthcare system, are seeing the value of personal care services as part of their healthcare continuum offering. And with the push by the government and the push by, you know, pretty much all the payers to try to provide the care in the home, I think this industry will be hot for a long time to come from an M&A perspective. So I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon, Bob.
Yeah, and our colleagues at Hospice News actually just reported on, we're seeing more end-of-life care companies acquire non-medical home care companies because that helps with quality of care and just preventing readmissions and filling any kind of care gaps that may arise. So couldn't agree with that point more. In the next minute or two we have to wrap up here, I wanted to see if there are any other trends that have caught your attention that you wanted to talk about. And then if not, just, you know, give us a sneak peek at what's to come for senior helpers in the rest of 2022.
Yeah, well, I think we talked about data. We talked about, you know, workforce. We certainly talked about those quite a bit. Yeah, looking at technology and what's happening within the home. And I mean technology, not from the basic PERS systems perspective, but, you know, where they're just personal response systems. I'm talking about really more what I would call invisible / passive listening and artificial intelligence technology that can help to find out something that's really happened that you wouldn't pick up normally through anything else. I mean, if you have to wait for a button to push, that's kind of reactive. I'm thinking more technology in the home to really help to bring more hospital to the home, more ability to look at, you know, vital signs and other types of things, looking at other types of activities within the home, you know, fall prevention, obviously detecting falls. A lot of people that have a PERS system in the house, a majority of them don't push the button because they're unconscious. So how do we find ways of making sure that those things don't happen? I think technology is going to start to play a continuing role, but I think it has to do something because you can't have caregivers in the home 24/7. Regardless of senior helpers, I think the future's, I'm almost a broken record. I've done this now 20 years. I continue to tell our owners who are phenomenal and our great teams out there that the next year is brighter than the year before. And I think we've been able to prove that pretty much every year. I really love what we're doing on our assessment tool with Like Profile. It's been something that's really given us a huge competitive opportunity and advantage, but also allow us to have conversations with payers and government about ability to keep people home safely. And there's nothing like it in the industry. I'm looking forward to that continuing to be expanded. Our center of excellence continue to be expanded. Demand, we want to continue to work the workforce challenges out there and continue to get retention and recruiting better and better and better. We look forward to being another great place to work again for the fourth year in a row. So I look to senior helpers being very bright. I throw on top of that we're just scratching the surface with Advocate of War and Enterprises and Advocate of War Health. And what we've done so far has been good. And I think what we're going to do going forward is even greater. So the future is so bright for senior helpers.
I've been speaking with Peter Ross, CEO of Senior Helpers. Peter, it's been great to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of Disrupt.
Thank you, Bob, for having me. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Bob Holly, and this has been a production of AJ Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.